The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here. Today
FM. John Gibbons, 150 not out. And there's been people texting in saying they're delighted that we have this weekly spot. One or two texting in saying they're not. But there you go. We're continuing it. Hopefully we'll have another 150 at least, because we need to. On this is Earth Overshoot Day for Ireland. So tell us what that's about.
Sure, Matt. Basically, I suppose this is a process which has been tracked over the last 50 years or so. And the idea is to try to work out whether or not the Earth collectively and then individual countries are living within our planetary means. So I suppose the best analogy I can think is, imagine for a second you had a certain amount of money in the bank and then you had a certain amount of income coming in. So the question is, are we living off our current account or are we drawing down our savings, right? So in other words, kind of getting through the non-renewable resources. So what Earth Overshoot Day shows us basically is that in 1971, Earth Overshoot Day globally fell on December the 25th. So in other words, we were more or less getting through the year.
In sync.
Yeah, roughly. A little tight, but roughly. By 2000, that had fallen back to September the 5th. By 2024, in other words, this year, August the 1st. Now, so that tells us basically that September, October, November, December, 4 months of the year, we're basically living in planetary overdraft. Now, that's on a global scale. When we take that down and we zoom in and look, for example, at Ireland, our overshoot day occurs on today, May the 2nd. So basically, Ireland, Irish people, our 5 million population, have used our fair share of the planetary resources by the 2nd of May. So we will spend the next 7 months in ecological and resource overdraft. So we will be spending down, if you like, that savings account. So we're eating our way into non-renewable planetary resources by our high emissions, high consumption lifestyles.
Yeah, but I see that if you were to look globally, it's only countries like Morocco, Guinea, Moldova and Kazakhstan that actually live even close to Earth's carrying capacity. Do you want us to have the living standards of Guinea, Moldova and Kazakhstan?
I suppose what we have to do, it isn't really, again, what I want. This is simply about just basic reality. We have to live within the carrying capacity of our planet. And the reason, Matt, is, and it's a bit of a cliche to say it, this is the only planet we've got. So at the moment, if everybody lived like Ireland, like Irish people and consumed like Irish people and flew like Irish people and drove like Irish people, we would need 3.3 planet Earths. We don't have three planet Earths. We only have the one, and we have to figure out how to live within planetary boundaries. Now, you might say, well, OK, does that mean we have to consume less? Do we have to be thriftier with our spending of resources? And the answer is yes. Are we over-consuming now? The answer to that, I'm afraid, is yes as well.
Okay, well, that brings us to a report came out today from the Sustainable Energy Authority in relation to our energy use in this country. And it focused on one thing that was very interesting. It came up with Charlie Weston yesterday in Personal Finance, aviation fuel. Because it said that we set a new record last year for the amount of jet fuel used at airports. 1.36 billion litres of jet kerosene were used to fuel planes in Ireland in 2023, which was a 12.7% jump from the previous year and is the highest annual energy demand in air travel ever recorded.
Yeah, I mean, this basically indicates and points to a huge failure. And that failure, of course, is our failure to apply the taxes to aviation fuel that we apply, Matt, to everything else. Aviation fuel gets this incredible free ride. And I'll give you a couple of numbers.
Sorry, that's an EU decision. It's not just a decision of the Irish government, is it?
Sure, it is. I mean, within that, I mean, we have to be pushing collectively. I mean, aviation and maritime sector, I should say, global marine sector, have had this weird free pass on emissions for decades because of their international dimension. But really, that relates to a time, for example, when aviation was a trivial contributor to emissions. Now it's a major one. But just to give you an example, Matt, in 2019, which is just before COVID, the state forego or forewent 634 million in tax exemptions. In other words, in revenues not charged, taxes not charged on aviation fuel. And that explains the great paradox of the old 20 quid flight, how it's possible for airlines to induce demand, to get us to fly places that we don't need to go on trips that we don't need to make because they're getting these crazy tax breaks. Nobody else gets these kind of tax breaks. If you go down to your petrol station and you fill up with a litre of diesel, a litre of petrol, you're paying carbon tax, you're paying duty, and you're paying VAT. You're paying none of these with aviation fuel.
I did a poll last year, just off the top of my head, suddenly asked the question during Charlie Weston's section yesterday. And he was telling us about the increase in carbon taxes for things like home heating and for the petrol or diesel that people put in their cars. And I asked, would you be happy to pay higher prices for your airline flights because of tax been imposed on the jet fuel, jet kerosene, if in return you had your carbon taxes removed for what you do at home or you do in your car? And the reason I asked the question was, is that heating your home is an essential. Driving your car, in many cases, is an essential. Deciding to take a flight, in most cases, isn't essential. So why not impose the taxes there rather than on things that are relevant to people's day-to-day living?
Well, I think the first thing, and you identified it in your earlier remarks, we have more control over domestic decisions and taxation. Some of the things like aviation is really at an EU level. So that's the first thing. We have more control over the decisions we make locally. But I don't think it's that simple. I mean, carbon taxes, for example, on home heating fuel, on petrol and diesel, they have a purpose. And that purpose is, number one, to deter us burning more of the fuels that are causing the harm. So there, if you like, we want to reward public goods and we want to penalise public bads. We want to have a situation where people say, okay, it's getting expensive to run my diesel car. Maybe I should look at an alternative. Maybe I should look at an electric car. Maybe I should look at, are there public transport alternatives? Can I use my car less? The purpose of taxation in that case is about nudging behaviour. So removing tax basically, that will actually set you backwards. In the same way, Matt, that cigarettes are taxed savagely. And it isn't primarily as a tax-raising exercise. The primary function of taxing things that we want less of in society is to signal to the public that this is a problem. And also, by the way, it gives us a handy source of revenue. So, for example, if you go to upgrade your house, to install a heat pump, to do those pro-social steps, that there's a big sinking fund available to the government to finance that.
So what I proposed last night, which the majority of our listeners wholeheartedly endorsed, was of a trade-off. You wouldn't do that trade-off. You'd keep the carbon taxes and then you'd add in the tax on the jet kerosene, which would mean more expensive tickets for going on airplane journeys.
Absolutely. Go back to our opening segment here, Matt. We are already in ecological overdraft as of today. The next 7 months, all of us in Ireland, in our relative privilege to live in this country, we're spending down non-renewable ecological capital. We have to catch ourselves on a bit. We have to live within the limits of the planet. Now, nobody's asking anyone to pull on a hair shirt, but it's not unreasonable to expect that highly damaging activities that only a tiny handful of people globally ever get to benefit from should at least be taxed in relation to the harm that they do.
Okay, tell us about mosquitoes heading north.
That's right, and not on their holidays, I'm sorry to say. Yeah,
come back perhaps in people's luggage.
They certainly do. And I mean, obviously, as you say, with international travel, mosquitoes they've always come back to northern countries, but they don't tend to survive over winter because they're very prone to particular exposure to frost will basically neutralise mosquitoes. Now, what's happening, as we know, we're getting fewer and fewer frost days in the northern hemisphere, which means that the range of the disease vectors like mosquitoes is basically travelling north. So what we've seen is a huge northern extension of the range of these very, very dangerous vectors. So, for example, we know that the Asian tiger mosquito, it now carries dengue fever into 13 European countries, Italy, France, Spain, Malta, Monaco, San Marino, Gibraltar, Liechtenstein, Switzerland, Germany, Austria, Greece, and Portugal.
So don't we have medicines to deal with anyone who gets ill as a result of a mosquito bite? Don't we have vaccinations? That means that even if the whole of Europe was to be infested by mosquitoes, we'd have a way of dealing with it.
I wish that were the case. Malaria is probably the world's most dangerous disease. About between 500 and 600,000 people a year, mostly in sub-Saharan Africa, die as a result of malaria transmitted through mosquitoes. Dengue fever, again, huge mortality and also huge morbidity. In other words, huge amounts of illness related to these. And of course, illness means loss of productivity, it means loss of income, and it means hardship. They reckon, Matt, that in sub-Saharan Africa, roughly 1,000 kids a day die of malaria. Now, are there vaccines? There are slowly coming on stream vaccines, but guess what? They're not available in poor countries. So I've got a sneaking feeling that the plan in the Northern Hemisphere is that as these diseases start to come up, you'll suddenly find the pharmaceutical industry developing more effective vaccines. We saw that, for example, obviously with COVID, where as soon as COVID became a threat to the Northern Hemisphere, then suddenly there was a massive surge in interest and in focus by the pharmaceutical industry and indeed by governments in investing billions on coming up with treatments and with vaccines. Now, the issue I think here is that we have what are called disease-naive populations. So, for example, if malaria gets to Ireland, the population here, we have no exposure to it. We have no protection from it. We have no resistance to it. So it would cause massive illness, really serious illness. And even with our healthcare system, you would probably expect to see quite a few fatalities as well. And we know, for example, that malaria has moved up above Paris in France, which is a real indication. If it can survive in northern France, Matt, it can survive in Ireland.
Okay, just very briefly, some of the comments coming in. One listener says, I worked in aviation for over 20 years, not anymore. People do fly socially way too much. My family and friends go on at least two flights a year. Personally, I go on one foreign holiday every 2 years now. DAA staff get discounts on Aer Lingus flights after a number of years. Obviously, Aer Lingus and all other airline staff get great discounts. I know of a woman who flies to London once a month for a facial. True story. Do not read out my name because I'll be lynched. But there are people bringing up the thing as well about the democratization of air travel, suggesting that if you do land extra taxes and if you put the price of fuel up, which brings the ticket prices up, it means we'll get back to where we were in the past that only the rich can fly. Hmm. Is there not a way around that to actually be fairer, that maybe some sort of rationing system depending on people's wealth?
Absolutely. It's something I've floated a number of times, and this is the idea of connecting our aviation to our PPS number so that each of us gets a fair share of aviation. Call it 1,500 kilometres a year, call it 2,000 kilometres a year at normal rates. And beyond that, you ratchet it up. The idea really, Matt, is that, yes, of course, aviation is a fabulous resource. Nobody is doubting that. It's a fantastic thing. And I wish, by the way, there was something like sustainable aviation fuels that actually squared the circle. I really do, because, I mean, aviation, you know, it's a brilliant thing to be able to travel the world. I mean, it's one of the miracles of our generation. The problem is there are no fixes like sustainable aviation fuels. There won't be in our lifetime, I'm sorry to say. And what we really have to do is to come up with an equitable way to share the remaining global carbon budget. And the fastest way of getting through your personal carbon budget in any given year is to get on an aircraft.
John Gibbons, thank you.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Today FM. It all happens here.